Thank you for joining us at Meet Me at the Diner with your host, Ann Eller. Today we have a special guest, Keith Cardwell, who's here for Click 646. Now here's your host. Hello, Ann.
Hello there, Rob. That's right. It is Click 646. Starts late this afternoon. You don't want to miss it. And I have captured Keith Cardwell right here. He's here to judge the event. He's here to be part of it. He is a most, I might say, a most interesting fellow we have right here. How are you doing today, Keith?
I'm very well. And good morning to you all. Oh, sorry, good afternoon.
That's right, good afternoon. Now, Keith, of course, you're not Southern, are you?
No, I'm not Southern.
You're from...
I'm Liverpool originally, but I was sort of dragged up in Lichfield, which is in the Midland area of England.
Let's see, and you grew up with the Beatles over there, didn't you?
I knew George. I wouldn't want to know Paul McCartney, I'm afraid.
You wouldn't?
No.
Okay.
But,
But George,
I love George. He was very sweet, even as a 17-year-old. George was a great guy.
Yeah.
He opened an exhibition of mine in 2000 in London.
Wow.
About a year before he died, yeah.
Wow. So you are a world famous photographer. You have been China, you have done Cuba, you have been down on the coast of South Carolina doing, I'm looking at great ballet pictures here. We're going to be talking about all of this. But, you know, one of the things I always want to know is how somebody got started in photography. And we were talking before we came on the air. You told me you actually started out as a painter.
I did indeed. In fact, I studied as an engineer before I became a painter. And I went back to college to do life drawing, painting, whatever. And that foundation led me on to a degree course. And I did a degree in fine art. And through doing fine art, painting, again, sculpture, photography, I chose photography as a medium because photography allowed me the freedom to be able to travel. And traveling was, before I went to college, was a big part of my life.
Well, so, okay, so you were into doing this. You said, actually, you started out with painting. You even got into filmmaking, but you liked that ability to work alone.
Yeah, that's very true. As a filmmaker, you have to rely on so many people. And unless you're paying them wads and wads of cash, which is not possible as a student,
right?
Then things tend to fall apart. You can be a filmmaker... You know, like Michael Snow, the comedian, just, you know, making films alone or with another sound recordist or whatever. But proper films, you know, are
right.
made in collaboration. And it's this collaboration which I really didn't like that much because it was relying on other people's ability to be in point A at
right.
a particular time.
You know, I just wonder sometimes, you know, I've only been doing radio for like 3 years now, and I've never had any training. It's just something that happened, and I turned out to be pretty darn good at it. But, you know, when you look back at your life, and here you are, this world-famous photographer, you travel around, you've lived in China for 7 years, you spent time in Cuba. There's a great photograph here of the old man in the sea. You knew Hemingway. What do you have to say about this life that you've lived?
I don't know. It just happened.
Did you ever think it would happen like this,
no,
though?
No. I'm a true existentialist, I'm afraid. The things that happen today are sometimes controlled, mm-hmm. but, you know, and I want more control as you get older, right? You
right.
want to know where you are the next year and things. But you can't deny that stuff happens to you. And you just, I have done, is go with the flow. If you try and control it at the beginning, then it becomes sterile. The energy goes.
Right.
You know, the subject matter should be the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
The people you are photographing, the culture you're in, should reflect what they are about, not what you think they are. And this takes time. So 7 years in China, although I was working for the Guardian Observer newspaper, mm-hmm. was also a learning curve on Chinese.
Right. And, you know, one of the things we were talking about, back in the 60s, the early 70s, the world was different.
Very different.
What was different about it? What would you think about between yesterday, the 60s, the 70s, and today's worlds, and kids growing up today, the differences that they're experiencing?
Well, you know, you had to be there, really, to understand what the energy, the, you know, the control that is today on events, and, you know, events are generally quite good now, but they didn't have the energy. Maybe the perception of them was different. I don't know. I went to a Leonard Cohen concert this year, and it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Absolutely fantastic. And the man's 74 years old. But I grew up with those songs, right?
Right.
And they're still as valid as they were in 1969, 1970, you know?
Don't you think, though, that we actually, back in that time period, we had the opportunity to experiment?
Yes.
In today's world, you know, kids here in the 7th, 8th grade, they've got to be making up their mind what they want to do in the future.
That's right.
What would have happened to
you?
Well,
I mean, you know, can you imagine in the 60s saying to an 18-year-old, join a pension plan?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Right. I don't know about free love. I missed out on that.
Oh, come on. I'll bet you didn't, Keith.
I look for it, but it weren't popping up in front of me.
Yeah.
So whatever.
But anyways, yeah. But today, they are very channeled, and we are so busy. Don't you think life is so much more busy?
Yes, yeah. You can't afford to waste time now, right?
Right.
Because you get overcaught with stuff.
Do you ever find yourself getting caught up in being too busy today?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to make space that you say, look, I'm not doing this stuff. You know, I get phone calls from, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? In magazines,
right,
you know?
Sure.
And I say, well, I'll email you. No, I want to know now. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't do that. Yeah. And if you misquote me, I'll sue you.
Hey, we're here with the one and only Keith Cardwell. He's here. He's judging the photography exhibit for Click 646. You don't want to miss this event. We have quality people here to do a great job for us. Hey, we're going to be back in just a minute. Don't you go away. This is WLMA 1350 AM.
Hello, I am John Holloway, and welcome to Click 646, October 16th and 17th in Uptown Greenwood. We have a wonderful weekend in store for you. Please join us down on Oregon Avenue for keynote speakers from around the world, projections on buildings, wonderful gallery receptions, museums, the Federal Building, Sundance Gallery. It'll all be available for you during Click 646, October 16th and 17th. Tickets available at the Greenwood Community Theater or online at click646.com. See you on Oregon, October 16th and 17th.
We are back here with Keith Cardwell. We have just been talking about his experiences, a little bit about his experiences growing up. I don't think he's going to tell me a lot, but I can tell you what. We just had a call come in. Beth Locke said, is he wearing a headband? Yeah, he's a hippie here, folks. He's a rocker. Looking forward to meeting a life explorer. That's what she said, Keith. And she said she actually met you in Manchester nearly 30 years ago. How about that?
I'm astounded.
Right here in Greenwood.
I'm astounded. Yes.
Yeah. So this is going to be a great event, isn't it? And I just need to ask you, why a man from England would come all the way to Greenwood? And then, of course, we have Joyce Tennyson and all these people that have come together for this. Why would you guys do this?
To promote photography. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll go to the ends of the earth to promote photography, because photography, for me, is one of the most sensitive mediums you could ever wish to take up. It is very, very... When people let you into their lives and you make pictures of them, mm-hmm. there is a certain responsibility you have how to make those pictures,
right,
and present them in certain manner. The other great influence in coming here was John O. Holloway.
Wow. Now, how did you meet John?
John was an MA student at SCAD in Savannah College of Art and Design in Savannah.
So
and
you
I was a professor there, yes, for 4 years. And John was an MA student. And I chose John. Really, I never really taught John. We sort of rubbed shoulders in dark rooms and we talked. And I was the mad Brit, of course. in John's eyes. But I chose John because of his work to work on a book for the 96 Olympics. So I chose 4 students and myself to make a small book that the Historic Society of Savannah commissioned me to do.
Wow.
And John Holloway shot this photo essay of that great event in Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
And the book was slightly disappointing because of the printing, but it has the energy of 4 people, and all people with different structures in their life. And the way they perceive photography is very differently.
Mm-hmm.
Because let me just quote somebody that I really quite, admire. Mm-hmm. Edward Weston was a great American photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked him in the 1930s, Mr. Weston, how can you be creative with a mechanical object? You know, it's a camera. And he replied to the people, I go out in the world, I see something, I see something which affects me spiritually, visually, mentally, relates to my childhood, relates to my aspirations for the future,
mm-hmm.
and I make the picture, I click, in other words, I click,
yep.
and then I apply the craft. Now, 70% of American photography is about craft, so I came here to enjoy a new craft, because I was an image maker for magazines, newspapers. I did have exhibitions, but only as a reflection of what I did in the newspaper. They were never really fine art as such. What happened when I came here and met John and people like him was to change my idea of photography again.
Wow.
Because the Americans have a great sense of reinventing themselves, which I admire so much.
Yeah. So so John just was one of the people that you thought had that energy and had that spirit to create.
Yeah, and trust.
And trust.
That's a big thing for people to be able to trust other people. You know, their guiding light is their character, right?
Exactly.
And John has a warmth and, you know.
Oh, he does. And everything he attacks it.
Yes,
I mean, he makes it happen. I mean, he just finished, Beautiful Places, the book.
Yes.
What did you think of the book?
It's fabulous.
Yeah.
It's fabulous. There's some pictures in there which, you'll be looking at in 50 years' time and say, wow, we thought that would be there forever.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. And, you know, that's one of the things that he has traveled to so many different places, just as you have. I mean, you have traveled everywhere. Now, you said you started out working for a newspaper in London, and it was a different experience. But then you said something about they sent you to China for 7 years. Did you piss somebody off?
Oh, always.
Always.
It's an ambition of mine.
An ambition. Okay, folks, you heard it now.
No. The editor of The Guardian, the picture editor of The Guardian newspaper, we used to call the visually handicapped.
Because?
He had no idea about photography.
He just wanted straight-on shots, probably, just, you know.
Well, no, he was, they were subservient to what the, he was a wordsmith paper.
Oh,
before
okay.
I moved there.
Yeah.
And I went to Northern Ireland first, and I lost some of the,
hearing?
Some of the hearing, because I was watching Out of Africa.
Yeah.
And they blew the cinema up.
They blew the. Oh, you were watching them make it, actually.
I was watching Out of Africa, the Robert Redford movie.
Right.
And I never saw the end of it because they blew the wall out. And I went deaf for 3 months.
Wow.
Nobody killed in that bomb, but, the Irish. You see, my grandparents are Irish, so I had the ability to be able to walk up the Falls Road and not get murdered.
And get murdered. Well, so they sent you over there to China, and you did fabulous stuff over there in China.
Yeah, I worked.
How was it to work with people, though, that you didn't know their language? How does that work?
Well, it's even more difficult, and I became very lazy in terms of Mandarin is so difficult. Mm-hmm. And there's 30 different dialects, of course, in China. They have about 3,000 characters. You know, it's not 26 letters in an alphabet.
It's nothing.
You know, and also they're all autonomous regions. Mm-hmm. If you're traveling from A to B in China on the train, which I loved to travel on the train, some places in China, you had to get off the train with your cases and walk up the track because the gauge was different. They were autonomous regions, so they had different structures, different, you know.
They were like individual countries,
yes,
and they didn't mesh together.
That's right. As America was when it first became America, of course.
So while you were there, did you have problems? Photographing people? Did they like to be photographed?
Yes, the Chinese love photography, and it's developing into a country which, you know, now they have money, they're starting to look round towards the arts in general. I mean, for God's sake, they built 4 museums in Shanghai 5 years ago with nothing to put in them. So they had.
Did you help them out?
They bought everything they could in New York that year. They spent millions and millions of dollars on Picassos and stuff,
did you get any of your work over there? Did they buy anything from you?
Oh yes, I had several exhibitions, but in them days photography was seen as I never showed any stuff outside of China. They wouldn't allow that.
They wouldn't allow you to show your pictures?
No. Yeah? I got a professorship there soon after I moved there, because if you work for China, mm-hmm. the People's Republic, then you get a little red card, and then you can go anywhere. Whereas if you don't work for China in the 1980s, you couldn't leave the cities. You couldn't go on expeditions to Longshan, for example. Mm-hmm. And I was interested in minority tribes. They came in from Turkey about 4 centuries ago, and the Chinese really admire these minority people.
Wow.
But they are protected, and they wear the most colourful clothes and whatever. But visually, they're stunning, and they're very different in their face structure, their bone structure. Their culture is very different, a lot more sophisticated than the average Hun. But China, you know, you feel a bit of an upstart walking down the road in Nanking, knowing that 4,500 years ago, somebody was walking up the road, you know?
It gives you a different perspective,
doesn't it?
Oh,
it does indeed. It does indeed.
Did you hate to leave?
No. I found China very dirty.
Very dirty.
And the Chinese were, the home Chinese, for my opinion, they were cruel.
Cruel?
Yeah, very cruel. Especially, you know how in the West we love animals.
Right.
I cannot cope with the stuff I photograph sometimes. Yeah. But, you know, it had to be done because...
That's the reality.
That's the stuff that they want to see.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So you went to... you spent a lot of time in China. Of course, you're probably very famous for what you did in Havana, in Cuba.
Yes.
Lots of stuff there.
Yeah.
In fact, we're going to be talking about that in just a moment after we come back from the news. We had another call come in. Let's see. Charles Winner. He wants to know, are you still doing work in Savannah?
Occasionally. Every 3 or 4 years. I did the historic book on Savannah. SCAD still have masses of my work, because obviously they paid me to teach there, mm-hmm. and I was also connected with the communications department, so I was a special programs photographer too. Wow. So a lot of my work is still in Savannah, and actually most of the restaurants have my work in it, so I'm a bit like a skid mark in a way. I'm still in Savannah in spirit.
Isn't there a road named Skidaway or something down there? Yeah. I thought there was. All right. Well, anyways, we are here with the one and only Keith Cardwell. You want to stay tuned in. We're going to hear South Carolina news. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Havana. We're going to be talking about Click 646. So don't go away. This is 1350 AM.
Do you shop Sharp Facets? Well, if you don't, you should shop Sharp Facets. This is Jim Bohannon, and I know just how to keep myself out of the doghouse. I find my wife beautiful jewelry at SFG. Stop in and see them at 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, or call 229-6613.
You're here at Meet Me at the Diner with your host, Ann Edler, with today's special guest, Keith Cardwell. And now, here's Ann.
Oh, that's right. We're here having a great time, and the calls keep coming in here, Keith Cardwell. I had no idea so many people know you personally now. We're not talking about just your body of works, but
these
you personally.
Poor folk.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is pretty funny. Let's see. We were talking about Charles Winter. And then he said, will you be placing any of your work at John's Gallery for sale? And also, he loved his Car Factory works, the Morgan.
Yes. You know, I've waited 25 years to make that photo essay.
Yes.
And it's ongoing this year. This year is the Morgan Motor Company's 100th anniversary. And for that, we're celebrating by I'm making a book on Morgan. And I'm making black and white film, mm-hmm. and I'm making black and white silver prints, and which is really rare these days, of
right.
course, because of the cost, basically. But these prints are gloriously beautiful, gloriously beautiful. And we have an exhibition at the Royal National Theatre next February, March. The whole photo essay is about Morgan, but it's also about the English landscape, which I've wanted to do, but always felt that I had to have something to put into the landscape.
And the Morgan is it,
and
huh?
And the Morgan is the most beautiful object.
Now, do you own one of these?
No. I will have next year, I think, when I move house, I'm planning. But London is not the place for a Morgan, really.
Okay, so you're going to have a Morgan. Now, you brought up an interesting point. Do you think you have to be, could you have just gone out and done some of the works you've done, like when you went to Cuba, without having prior experience in something? We were talking about how things prepare one for doing
yes.
certain types of jobs.
You see, in China learned me a lot. China was, I had lots of, obviously, because I was a painter, right?
Right.
And I knew about painting, so I sought out these people. They didn't just come into my life. I went looking for them.
Right.
And I met painters.
You did
painters.
Kind of stand out, didn't you?
Yes. Well, sort of, yeah, sort of. I was taller. That was an advantage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, painters have a wonderful way of preparing themselves in China. If they want to make busy work... Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, gestural, whatever, energy work.
Right.
They're very quiet before they make the picture. In other words, they are alone. If they want to make quiet works, mm-hmm. they're with their families, there's lots of noise, and because they realize, and we should realize, that we are in reaction to everything. Our bodies are in total reaction to the way we are, the rhythm of our lives, right?
Well, and so, what is that? That's a physics. Every action has an equal
yes,
and opposite reaction.
That's right.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. It can be put in scientifically.
Yes.
But the Chinese, and I rely on intuition. I rely on it because my intuitive senses have never let me down.
Yeah.
Well, rarely.
Rarely?
Yeah. Maybe in Tibet I got a bit of a, you know, a confrontation with the Chinese little border guards. But, you know, however...
That's another story,
yeah,
folks.
That's another story. But when coming back to... when I came back from China to England mm-hmm. and I couldn't settle down, I took a job in Savannah. Now, obviously, I'm a photojournalist. I've been a photojournalist for 30 years, and I can't just sit and tell everybody what to do and not do anything myself.
Exactly.
So I scouted Savannah the first week I was in Savannah for a subject.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked into this church, and it turned out to be the First African Baptist Church of Savannah from 1776. 1777.
That gives you some history.
And it built by slaves. And it's not the first congregation, but it's the oldest black church in North America. And I said to the... There was a wedding going on. It was Saturday. It was the 9th of September, 1995. I went to the Reverend Thurman Tillman, and I said, "Excuse me, sir." "Yes, sir." "Can I possibly make a few pictures?" "Do what you like. We have a wedding here." "Okay. Thank you.
Please don't bother us."
So there, yeah. So 6 months later, he announced to the church, "Keith asked me if he'd do some wedding pictures. He's not left yet." And I didn't. I travelled with them. I did the photo essay. Scad loved it because it was the first professor that had ever done anything on the black community. Anything positive, anyway.
Right, yeah.
And it really was. But however, back to your first question, the first African and the structure of the first African prepared me for the work in Cuba. Not because I photographed black people in Cuba, mm-hmm. although I did.
Right.
It was the way they structured the whole church, men's choir, children's day, the relationship between music and the congregation, the uplifting feeling of the toil of a week's work and then going to the church. I mean, for goodness sake, 4-hour sermons are not where I want to be doing, but kids of 6-year-old were sitting there for 4 hours. I couldn't get over this. This was another planet for me. It was almost China in its time lapse, you know?
Time warp.
Yeah, yeah.
Time warp, yeah.
Yeah, that the structure was, you know, I'm busy everywhere else, but when you got in this church...
You were in another world.
You had to adhere to this structure. And it prepared me for Cuba very much.
Wow. I think we have to take that time, and it's almost like a sociology study, isn't it?
Yes.
When you get into different cultures and different environments.
Yeah.
And yet you don't have forever to do that.
No, you don't. You don't. What you have to do is to be honest with yourself and the situation, and you have to try and penetrate the system,
mm-hmm.
You have to... Showing the photographs reflect a sort of synthesis of what this culture or experience is. There is a misconception that Cuba has been cut off from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It has been self-contained. It's a totally different way of thinking.
There are some people that think we need to become self-contained.
United States, it needs
to be self-contained.
No, you can't do that.
No,
You've gone too far. But, Cuba was forced. They have a cure for meningitis. They have, you will not believe the medical system in Cuba. I'm no pat on the back for Fidel. There's parts of his government that I really don't want to talk about.
Right,
and,
I understand.
You know, whatever, but...
they survived.
You have to speak as you see. I mean, young taxi drivers hate him because they can't borrow money, they can't build houses, they can't make something of their lives. Now, the Cubans are very much like the Americans. They are motivated, they are forthright, they want to change themselves. In some sense, somebody's saying to them, no, we have to do things this way because of the majority.
So they have their own self-prescribed structure.
Yes.
Would be a way to describe
it. Yes.
Hey, we've got more calls coming in. If you'd like to give a call, 229-7984. We're going to be back. I'm really enjoying this conversation I'm having with Keith Cardwell. He's going to be speaking at Click 646. He's judging the event. Hey, don't you go away. We'll be right back.
Would you like to stay informed on WLMA 1350 AM, the news talk station which keeps you in the know with shows like The I Love Ann Show, Lou Dobbs, Sports Talk, and football from USC to Emerald High School? Then pick up your mobile-ready cell phone and go to WLMA.net. Click on the mobile icon and you will be able to hear all the great programs on WLMA 1350 AM streaming directly to your cell phone. Just go to WLMA.net.
All right, that's right. We're talking about, well, this is about Click 646. We've been talking to Keith Cardwell here, and he is a real card, let me tell you, folks. He has had, I'm going to say, you sound like you have had a fabulous life, Keith.
Yes, but it's not over yet.
I know, but
you
I
say
mean,
card, people call me Cardi.
Cardi.
Everybody calls me Cardi.
Okay, well, now we've got the inside scoop here. And you, of course, are the keynote speaker on Saturday night.
I am.
That's right. And you don't want to miss this. Just give us a little overview about what you're going to be talking about, Keith.
Well, I'm showing work, basically.
Okay.
And what I'm going to talk about, stories about the pictures, how they were made, and in what circumstances they were made, and then where they were shown or promoted, and who selected who, whatever, but mainly about the pictures. The pictures, you know, when I leave this planet, that's all there is, right?
You know,
and they're a bit
nice?
Like they're
isn't
a bit like children, aren't they?
Yeah, isn't it nice though that when you do, you will be leaving something behind?
Yes, of course. A legacy is very important, and I will go to the ends of the earth for a photographer. I interview and talk to a lot of older photographers. That's one of the reasons why I sought out Alberto Diaz Corda in Cuba, because he made the most famous image in the world of Che Guevara, right? Which is on every T-shirt known to man. In fact, they call him T-shirt boy in Cuba.
T-shirt boy in Cuba?
Yeah. And I can remember walking in a Walmart in Florida with a Che T-shirt on, and I wasn't really welcome. The guy threw the change at me.
Threw the change at you. Yeah, wow. All right. But, you know, so you're going to be talking about your photos, how they were made. This is going to be a very informative event. It is actually at 7 p.m. It is at the
Saturday.
Greenwood Community Theater on Saturday. Now, let me tell you, tickets to that are $25. But here's a tip, folks. The best deal to be able to go to all the events going on this weekend is that full access discovery pass, which is only $75. I think you can tell by my conversation here with Keith today, there are quality people that have put this together. Joyce, you said y'all went out to dinner last night. Joyce Tennyson.
Joyce. Yeah, fantastic photographer.
And it was good to catch up.
She's yes, of course. And Christina,
course. Christina, yes.
And John, of course, his photography.
And you know, I think it's amazing. You're always talking about a photo essay.
Yes.
These are pictures without words.
Yeah, the equivalent to language. Now, we have, you know, as soon as you show someone a photograph, it relates to memory. You know, you can remember, can't you? Going to relations or friends, and they showing you their photo albums.
Their family photo album,
Or you may have known them for 30 years, so you're looking at people that have are not yet around, but I remember that coat, I remember that hat, is only the surface of what you scratch when you look at old photographs, because they all relate to memory. Photography is the most sensitive, I've said this before during this interview, is the most sensitive media, because you are dealing with the way people are at that moment, and that moment changes
every moment. Now, that brings me to another question. You know, we've got all kinds of, you know, kids used to grow up. I can remember not wanting to have my picture taken as a kid. You know, oh, not again, Mom! And now kids grow up, everybody is striking a pose, taking a picture, whether it's on a cell phone, digital.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you say about the way that's all changed?
Well, you know, photographers hate their picture taken. I can tell you that now.
Yeah.
Anybody takes my picture, you're dead.
No.
Yeah, so, but they do, they hate that. However, relating to the technical advances in photography or recording reality.
Recording reality, that's
yeah,
a good
yeah,
way
there's
to describe
a different, different perception, right?
Right.
Is it's throwaway. You know, people use cameras now like vacuum cleaners. Sucking up all the surplus. In fact, I worked it out when I was in China that every Chinese made a picture at the same time. There was more time than reality because they recorded 1/25th
of a
second.
On, you had a lot of time on your hand, didn't you, Keith?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
But no, it's what I ask and what I did when I was teaching is to ask students to take care, prepare themselves before, you know, it's no use going into a particular environment, steelworks, a church, someone's living room, and not having some preconception about what you're looking for. In fact, what you're doing is discovering your own prejudices by recording them. And it's a way of passing through some areas in your own psyche that you come out the other side a better person because of it. Right?
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, but I think you're probably right. I think probably doing things like the Cuban exhibit, did it change some of your preconceived ideas?
Oh, yes. The Cuba pictures are... I recently had an exhibition in London, and I showed some of the, the Bonavista Social Club.
Mm-hmm.
I showed, in fact, I did a book called The Bonavista Years. It was Cuba's coming out party. And the Bonavista Social Club, oh my God, it was a phenomenon. Because these people, they'd all been taught by one musician, and this was Benny Moray. Benny Moray was like, he danced like a stare, he sang beautifully, you know, he was as famous as Frank Sinatra in Latin America in the 50s and 60s. But what Benny did, and he played flute as well, but what Benny did mainly was attract young musicians. And these young musicians discovered this structure through Benny, and the energy of Latin America was born. And the Bonavista Social Club, when Raikuda went down there and discovered them again,
mm-hmm.
some of them, the piano player, Ruben Gonzalez, was shining shoes in the street. He was one of the finest piano players ever lived in Cuba. And he was very shy about coming in and to play with Raikuda. But he came in, he played for Ryan Roy, said, I can't believe this. And this music was in... you know, looked at again
right.
and became a phenomenon. They won 9 Grammys, for God's sake. And I showed that work. And, people, English people go to Cuba and they go to the beach, but they love salsa. They like to dance.
Mm-hmm.
And music is a integral part of that.
Well, it's international. Everybody can relate to music, just
yes.
like you can relate to art or photography.
Yes, it's true. And I admire musicians very much. I went to college with a lot of them. And I admire them for the immediacy. Unfortunately, photography, now it's more immediate, but for me, it's not. You have to work at it. You have to get a kind of synthesis. Bring elements together
mm-hmm.
and make pictures that, you know, that the Cubans will understand as well as the outside world. And there's pictures that I've made in Cuba that people have looked at and thought and said to me, how did you do that? How did you know that that boy on a horse with no shoes was a symbol of Cuba? I don't know. It's just being here. And
I think that would be it, being in that environment,
and
living it.
I've been 41 times to Cuba.
And you can't just go in there, run in, and take some pictures and leave.
No, no, no. In fact, I have young photographers come to me, and they say, I've been to Cuba 3 times, and how did you get in that building? And I say, through the door.
Through the door.
Which really totally pisses them off.
Have you ever had a time in your career where you just became totally frustrated, totally upset, and said, I'm putting down the camera, I'm not picking it up?
Oh, that's right. China. Because every day, you see, I wrote an article for The Guardian called Not With That Nose.
Yeah?
Because every building you ever went to in China, it was Mayo, no, no, you can't come in here. Right.
You're a dragon.
Look at your nose, man. You know?
You're a dragon.
So when I went to the villages, the kids used to run into the houses. They thought it was a dragon coming down the street. Because all their little noses, you know, they couldn't believe it.
Yeah, he's got a good-sized nose here. Yeah. He's got a schnoz.
Yeah. I'm no Barbara Streisand, but my God, if she went, she'd cause havoc.
She'd cause havoc. All right. Well, hey, you know, this has been so much fun. I am so glad you came out here today to talk. I wish we could keep talking because this is just fascinating stuff. But I know you've got to get ready. You're going to be at these events this evening.
Yes.
You'll be around.
Yes.
People can talk to you.
Yes.
Yes.
And they can also view the work. And if they want to purchase, all the work that I've got here is silver work. It's printed in the darkroom. It's not digital. It's made from film. And I'm selling a few prints too, which will cover the cost of certain things for this.
Well, that sounds great. Well, we certainly appreciate you coming out. I certainly hope each and every one of you are going to get out there and enjoy Click 646. It is an event of great magnitude. John Holloway put it together. The city has jumped on board and said, hey, we want to help promote this. This evening, there's going to be talks, there's going to be music, there's going to be food, you name it, for beautiful photography exhibits.
No free love, though.
No free love. Okay, well, you heard it from Keith right here. Hey, Cardi, it's been fun here today. This is WLMA 1350 AM, Greenwood in the Lakelands. He looks forward to seeing you. Thanks so much for coming out today, Keith.
Thank you, listeners, for tolerating me.
We'll look forward to seeing you this evening. And tomorrow, don't forget, he's speaking at 7 p.m. Again, this is WLMA 1350 AM, Greenwood in the Lakelands. We'll join the news in progress. Bye-bye.